I hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Tannen, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, to go, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
And we welcome you to the I Hate Zach Britton show. What an idiot. We'll talk with Steve Mims, who's not an idiot and is going to keep me calm at the bottom of the
hour. What are
you doing? So to Zach Britton, I ask.
What are you doing?
So they load the bases. First they get an out. They get a run down, and I think they got Springer going from third to home. Then they load the bases with one out. They bring Gurriel up, who obviously... That's a garbage pitch. Who are you kidding? And so they automatically load the bases because Gurriel certainly is as a potential double play. And Britton keeping the ball down and strike one. Caught the corner. Great pitch. Ball one. Then he bounced one that Sanchez did a good job to protect with a little assistance from the man in blue. And then he throws a 58.5 footer that bounces over the earth and a run is in. So Zach Britton channeling his inner Baltimore Oriole. Our day was ruined. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, is probably going to make it 4-2 as play goes into third, and 4-0. I'm sorry. Nada. Nothing. Gyaboik. We'll move along because, like I just said on Twitter, I have a feeling that we're going to look back on the Brett Gardner hit off Altuve, the alert play in the sixth inning Sunday by Carlos Correa to nail DJ LeMahieu at the plate is going to become an annoying turning point in this series for the Houston Astros. Because the Yankees can't sniff Gerrit Cole as they're now playing the top of the seventh. Two outs, man on second, 4-0 Strohs. All right, 284-8571. It's the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. 4 o'clock hour off and rolling. Bring in Steven. Steven, good afternoon. How's it going?
Going very well, Steve Tannen. I want to tell you, speaking of the Yankees, in the seventh inning, they're losing badly, but I want to tell you, me as the head of social water boy for NCU, there's an alumni basketball game at Northwestern University this Sunday. The girls play at 2 o'clock and the boys play at 4 o'clock. So I want to invite you and your buddies and the Oregon Duck athletes and Rob Mullins to come and cheer on the alumni basketball team of NCU this Sunday.
All right. Appreciate the invite, Stephen. Have a good one. Although I think I'm going to be at my grandson's birthday. Where is it? Oh, no, it's Saturday. Today is actually our grandson's sixth birthday. So happy birthday, Eugene. Man after my own heart. He gets to pick the meal my daughter-in-law is going to make tonight. He went full spaghetti. So I'm ready for dinner tonight. Of course, I'm going to need that period between the end of this game. I'm going to need about 45 minutes to an hour to get my appetite back if things continue as they are. By the way, you can text us 321-0-24 on Twitter. It's at 953 the score. For the station, for Nick, it's at Rick Nodgers. For me, it's at Sports Talk 953. We also want to pass along. We rendered a decision. Yesterday, we were talking about a potential nickname for this Oregon defense that's off to such a fantastic start. And we decided to just take the list and put it away. it's still the middle of October, as well as they've played unbeaten in division, chance to really put themselves firmly in the driver's seat with a victory on the road against the Huskies on Saturday. So we'll see. It's the consensus that from a lot of people beyond the suggestions is it's too early. Got to accomplish something. Is there a moment when you think about it? Gangrene had many moments. Obviously, the pick in 95, Jaya Figueres on the sweep to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar of the UCLA Bruins, the football player. Last play of the game, I think it was like 38-31, and he ran wide left, and they stuffed him, and that was the end of the game. The Jaya Figueres strip sack and fumble against Illinois, Bilotti's first home game as coach. I agree. Let's let the moments play out and see if perhaps a nickname presents itself. Aha. Yeah. A couple of you texted today. I love the fact that you guys get it. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has announced their nominees for 2020. The Doobie Brothers? Thin Lizzy? Whitney Houston, she's got to get in.
The Who Brothers?
Motorhead. Dave Matthews Band.
Yeah, all right. Let's go, Dave.
Judas Priest. Actually, you have to put the F in there if you're a real JFP fan. Nine Inch Nails. Notorious B.I.G. Oh, Rufus featuring Chaka Khan. Chaka Khan, Chaka Khan, Chaka Khan. T-Rex Soundgarden. Tell Me Something Good, Pat Benatar. I have the same crush on Pat Benatar I did when she first started. Love me some Pat Benatar. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Let me think about that a little bit before we render critical decisions.
Let's get some Dave Matthews Band in the Hall of Fame, man. It's about time. Touring across America for 25, 30 years now, going strong.
No, I think this is the first year of eligibility. It's got to be 25 years since your first actual release.
Oh, okay.
So it's 20, not a formation.
25 years since the first album, touring across America, having music played in college campuses for forever, for eternity, always rocking out every summer up at the Gorge for Labor Day weekend. Oh, yeah. Big Labor Day weekend up at
Dave Matthews Band.
Dave, he does a 3-day weekend during Labor Day up at the Gorge in Washington, and I went there 1 year, and oh my god, I didn't know so many Dave fans existed in the world, and that was just in one tiny little part of the state. There was people who road tripped from Wisconsin all the way through Canada to come down to Seattle or to up through to go to that concert for the weekend. It's insane. I also realized that those people like Dave Matthews Band more than I ever possibly could. Like, they not only listen to every album, but they're, like, checking the websites when he's on tour to see what songs he's playing. And, oh, my God, he hasn't played this since, 5 years ago in Wichita. And, wow, he pulled that one out, and he brought so-and-so on stage. It's crazy.
Dave Matthews-ing all over the place.
Oh, yeah. Give me some Dave, man.
The first Benatar album, Heat of the Night, came out when I was in college. Going back so long ago, and it had the song that Steinbrenner sang on Seinfeld. What? Costanza, who does that song? Heartbreaker, Dreammaker, Heartbreaker. That was like her first hit. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Josh. Josh, good afternoon. How's it going?
First of all, if the Dead Matthews Band gets in, I will roll over in my grave, and I'm not even dead yet. So,
wow, so there's a no vote.
I don't know. Dave Matthews is like Grateful Dead 2.0. It's like five, their greatest hits, five songs on 10 albums. But any of those jam bands are just too much for me. I can't take it. But if I had a choice, I would say Whitney Houston is probably a shoe-in. Notorious B.I.G. is probably a shoe-in, and I would think Soundgarden, just because they were before Nirvana, before Pearl Jam, and all those guys are in. And then if I had my way, Judas Priest and Motorhead would get in, but I doubt that's going to happen, but we'll see.
Nice call, though. Judas Priest
well,
might
I'm
have...
I'm calling in to talk about the Titans and Mariota. I, you know, as a Titans fan, it pains me to say this. I want better for Mariota than what they're giving him. And, you know, I feel like something's got to give, and I feel like that we've been ruining this guy's career. As a Titans fan who watched him every week in college, you know, I mean, I just don't want this guy. He's too good of a guy. He's too big of a talent for his career to get just wasted like this. And, you know, like, it pains me to say as a Titans fan, but I feel like they need to do something to let him go either be a backup behind somebody who is, whether it's New England or Seattle, somewhere where he can thrive, or be a starter in, like, Denver. I just think some sort of different offense, some sort of change, to not waste all his prime years, I think it just needs to happen.
Yeah, well, there's no way at this rate. I mean, they have an option on him next year, and so, I mean, he's gone. His days with the franchise, you got to figure, are gone, right? It's over.
Well, I think his confidence is shot. I mean, even if they decide to start him this week, I think by pulling the trigger halfway through, like, a meaningless game, and putting in a guy who is not going to do any better in Tannehill, I mean, it's been proven. I mean, you just destroyed this guy's confidence for your team. And I think Canzano, if you read Canzano's article, he hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's, you know, three different coaches, five different offensive coordinators, a new ownership under and this is all within 5 years of this guy. And, you know, and like I said, we had the luxury of, or I had the luxury as a Titans fan of watching him week in and week out in college. And I know what he's capable of, and they've tried to turn him into something he's not, and they just have, you know, they're ruining his best years of his career. And I like the guy too much to see that keep happening, and I think they need to let him go.
Well, I'll be curious to see how this plays out, but unless there's a remarkable turnaround, which I don't see, I think he becomes a free agent, and I wouldn't be surprised if he were starting for another team next year.
Well, we're not going to win 10 games the rest of the year starting Tannehill, I'll tell you that. So that's what the Titans think. Yeah, what? Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's just constant disappointment after constant disappointment, and they have been notorious for, you want to say it's a quarterback, but they have had failures after failure after failure of quarterbacks since McNair, and it's got, at some point it's got to be on the franchise.
Oh, absolutely. The problem is they've tried a lot of moves. They've all failed, whether it's Ben Jones or whatever they've done on the offensive line, draft picks that haven't panned out. So I know they've tried to build an arsenal around him. It just hasn't worked out.
Well, the big thing is I know I was notorious back in the day for being on Vince Young and, you know, saying how garbage he was. But, I mean, you bring these, like, huge talent guys, these athletic guys into your offense, and then you run the most vanilla offense ever and doesn't do anything to build around their talent and their skill set, this is what you get. And I think the reality is set in because I got to watch Mariota. I didn't watch Vince Young that day. I watched the national championship game. But I watch Mariota every week, and I know what he's capable of, and we're not, you know, we're trying to turn him into something he's not, like I said.
No, it's a bad match. They're an awful organization, and with luck, he'll leave, and I don't have to hear about the Titans from anybody but you.
Well, I just want them to draft or pick up Michael Vick so I can just have a reason to quit liking the Titans like you did.
Nice, Josh.
Hey, take care.
Take it easy. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, if you want to jump on in.
That's one way.
Yeah, I just want to be rid of the Titans. To tell you the truth, there are certain franchises in certain sports that it's like they're not part of us. It's across the country. It's in the South. It's not like they're the Patriots or even the Cowboys or a successful franchise that tends to fill up a bandwagon. People around here have become annoying Titans fans for one reason, and it's Marcus. Just this. So where could he possibly start next year? Pittsburgh? I mean, I guess they'll have to make a determination on the health of Roethlisberger. I can't do this right now. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Mike. Mike, good afternoon. How's it going?
Good. So let me tell you this story. We have a great college quarterback that won the Heisman Trophy, went to a really bad NFL team on the East Coast, got pummeled because of poor management and poor ownership, got traded, and eventually won two Super Bowls.
Okay.
And the gentleman's name was Jim Plunkett.
Yeah, first of all, Plunkett was a terrible NFL quarterback. He had two magical seasons. If you look at it, he never made a Pro Bowl. You can't just blame the organizations when guys play bad.
But the Boston Patriots were horrible back then.
I know. And then when he got to the Raiders, if you look, he didn't even play full seasons. He was injured. He wasn't good. He led the year that the Raiders won it in 80, I mean, the guy had 16 interceptions. The year they won it in 83, he had 20 touchdowns and 18 interceptions. You know, they won it because they had a great defense. They got hot at the right time. So I see what you're saying, but look up Plunkett's numbers sometimes and his one loss record over his career. You can't always just blame the organization. The guy played like crap a lot of times.
All I'm saying is if you give a guy a chance with some talent around him, he'll do a lot better than if he doesn't.
Yeah, I know. I understand that. All right, take it easy, Mike. First, I thought he was going to try and pull a Terry Baker, like the 1963 Heisman winner from Oregon State. Then I realized he was going for Plunkett. And people have to understand, Plunkett was a .500 quarterback. The year 1980, he played 11 games. He had a big Super Bowl. I mean, in the first one, he also caught a break that they played against Jaworski and the Eagles. And I believe in that game, Jaws threw more passes to the Oakland linebacker Rod Martin than he did to any of his players. And then they beat Washington 38-9. Marcus Allen was unbelievable in that game. So yeah, the whole Plunkett also played for the Raiders from 79-86. You know, he went 3-5 one year. He went 2-5 one year. So Marcus has some culpability. I mean, the Titans are a disaster of a franchise, but there have also been some plays where, like a couple people have said, and I don't want to be on this side of this argument to tell you the honest to God truth, because I really, like I said, I want him to leave the Titans more so for, because I don't want to hear about the Titans anymore than anything else personally. He's going to be fine. He's making $20 million this year. He's still young. He's going to probably get a couple more chances to start. So he'll be fine.
He could, just looking at the standings and the quarterback situations that are going on, maybe 9 teams next year could probably be in the market for a new starting quarterback and say, yes, we'll take one Marcus Mariota. A lot of these teams are probably going to end up drafting a quarterback in the first round anyway, which would be Cincinnati, Miami, probably Washington, and a couple others that are in not great situations right now that are still going to be in the market to mold another young quarterback. So you're looking at 5 teams potentially where you could be like, yeah, that we don't have to draft a guy to be our starter. We can draft 4 pieces around him and then make a play for him in free agency and hope that the Titans don't, franchise tag him or whatever. But the problem is that Marcus is not a bottom 9-10 quarterback in the NFL. He's just stuck right in that perfectly mediocre middle range guy that just has all the potential in the world that everybody in Oregon can't seem to imagine why he's not the best quarterback in the league, because for 1 year in college, he was the best quarterback in the NFL. So I don't know. Like, the Titans aren't in a great quarterback spot, but who are they going to get that's actually better than him? And they're probably not going to be bad enough unless they absolutely give up on him and they let Ryan Tannehill go the rest of the way. They're not going to be in position to take a new quarterback anyways.
So somebody asked me via the text line, has Mariota ever really just, as an NFL quarterback, stood in the pocket and kind of shredded teams down the field? I was like, does anybody do that anymore? There's not a lot of old school 5 to 7 step drop quarterbacks who are constantly completing at 40 yards downfield. That's like, I see where you're going with that. And yeah, he also has fallen into the trap of, I'm not going to turn it over. I'm not going to take a chance. I'm not going to take a risk. And we've called him check down Jones. We've seen that before. And, you know, obviously when you see a quarterback who historically leans on a guy like Delanie Walker, his tight end, but you know, they drafted Corey Davis, this Brown kid. You know, they brought in Ben Jones. They brought in the, what's his name, Roger Saffold, maybe?
Not a lot of great names. You're not, none of those names are popping off the chart as great weapons. Like,
no, Ben Jones, I'm talking about the offensive line.
Oh, okay.
That kind of matters.
Fair enough. But, like, they're running an offense where they want Derrick Henry to be the guy to run the ball a whole bunch. They want to be a physical power running team. And Marcus is in an offense with his receivers aren't running deep routes. They're sticking everything around power run and short gains, and he's just doing what the system is telling him. But you watch him when he has to run a 2-minute drill and he's putting the offense into motion and he's got to get yards together, he does a really good job. He had the game-winning drive last year, I think it was against the Jets. It was late in the season, but he had to stick together a 2-minute drive to get the Titans a win so he could put him back into playoff contention, and that's exactly what he did. And he was taking shots downfield and he was using his legs to make plays. And you've got a league that is saying, let's do spread offenses, take shots downfield, have someone who's a mobile quarterback that can just break out every now and then to just even get away from a broken pocket, and you have a guy who can do that, and you're saying, no, let's line up I formation, 5 tight ends, 6 offensive linemen, here we go, handoff, run the ball, and yeah, he's not going to look very good.
It's not a match.
No.
You would not take that skill set and match it to this scheme. That, I don't think, is debatable.
Which, and probably what's going to happen is Ryan Tannehill will probably come in relief or start a couple games randomly. He'll play well, and then everyone will say, wow, Marcus was the problem. He really is really bad. He really, you know, like, oh, he's just, get him out of there. He shouldn't be in the NFL anymore. What a waste of a talent. A bust of a top 2 pick. All while, you know, Lamis Winston has 7 turnovers in a game, and everyone's like, we'll give him another chance.
Somebody said that should be the trade. Winston for Mariota.
No, I saw that tweet on Twitter today. It's like, if you actually put Marcus in that Bruce Arians offense where they've got 2 legit wide receivers and they take the shots downfield that they need to be with a guy who's an actual good quarterback guru like Bruce Arians, he's going to get better. Tampa Bay would get really good if Marcus was their quarterback because he's also...
Are we sure about that?
They would be better. Jameis Winston sucks, man.
All right, calm down. Another one with a Mariota Tennessee jersey. Just from
it's a shirt. It's a jersey, and there's a lay on it, and it's very cool.
All right, that brings us to break time. We'll come back. We'll have an update, and we'll talk about something else, anything else, with Steve Mims of the Register Guard coming at you next. 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk. Coors Light is the official sponsor of your Oregon Ducks and the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953 for your chance to get involved. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Here's the 2-1. Swing and a line drive. That's a base hit into right center field. It's going to roll all the way to the fence. In to score is Rendon. Soto on his heels. Howie Kendrick comes through. It's 4-0 Nationals.
Yeah, the hero of the divisional series, Howie Kendrick, with another big blow. They busted open. Nats up 3-0 on St. Louis. Go for the clincher tonight. Pat Corbin toes the slab. They are into the bottom of the 8th at the Big Ball Orchard in the South Bronx with Houston on top of New York 4-0, 1-0. I do not. I'm canceling my dinner plans with the Garrett Cole. He had our day was ruined as we welcome you back. Sports Talk 95.3 The Score. It's very hard to hit a 4-run homer with nobody on. This is hashtag baseball analysis. By the way, as Gleyber Torres takes one out the other way to make it 4-1. We'll lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, bring in our good luck charm, talk some duckies. Who better than the fine sports journalist for the Register Guard, covering football and men's hoops. Follow along in the sports section of the paper. Online, try RegisterGuard.com, DuckSports.com on Twitter. The handle is at Steve Mims underscore RG. Mr. Mims, how's it going?
I'm good, Steve. I didn't have a baseball game in view, so thanks for the update.
Yes, believe me, if good things happen to the guys in pinstripes, I will completely interrupt you in this interview. No, seriously. So it's Husky Week, 25th anniversary of Kenny Wheaton. So you've delved into this iconic Register Guard photo of the sideline as Wheaton is end zone bound. So I'm kind of curious, the inspiration. It seems like you're involved in this really cool project based on that incredible shot. What should the folks know?
Yeah, thanks. Let me talk about that for a minute. Andy Nelson, who took the shot at the Register Guard 25 years ago and then left for a while, has been back for a few years. So he and I hope most people recognize the shot. Basically, what's most known for is you say Kenny and Mike Barrett, the old Blazer announcer, jumping in the air. And I've always kind of looked at that photo and thought, man, the people in the background, what are they doing now? What were they thinking at that time? And so coming up on the 25th anniversary, we were trying to come up with something new. And so I came up with the idea of kind of trying to track some of those people down. So I was able to track down Mike Barrett, I could say, who was the OSN announcer at the time. Dave Hickey, who's now the Arizona AD. He was the Oregon AD at the time. And he was talking about how, you know, Jerry Allen's call these days on that Monday morning, that would have been on social media. Well, there was no social media then, so they went back at Oregon, and if you called the ticket office on Monday, you got to hear Jerry Allen's call. There's another way to hear the replay of it. So if you called the ticket office, they said, press one for tickets, press two if you just want to hear Jerry's call again. A couple of the ball boys who were, you know, 12, 14 years old, and one was the son of old ticket director Hunt Holsapple, and one was the son of former Lane County Commissioner Bobby Green. I've tracked both them down. They're both in their late 30s, early 40s. And then my favorite is there's a dad with his daughter in his arms in the picture, and it's a local business owner, and his daughter, who was 3 at the time, is now 28, and we tracked them down. So it's going to be online Friday. It's going to run in print on Saturday. And it's just kind of, I talked with Andy Nelson, who took the photo, and kind of talking about just kind of that moment and how he got that moment. And you know, these days, if a photographer takes a picture, he can turn around digitally and see what he's got. Andy said, I thought I had it, but it was 2 hours before we could get back to the office and get through all the film before I knew that I'd actually kind of secured the shot. And so there's just kind of some cool moments 25 years later. And I hope most of you, you know, everybody remembers Jerry's call vocally. I think visually, Andy's shot was the one. And so it's just kind of a chance to kind of go back and revisit that picture and some of the people who kind of gained some fame from being in the back of it.
Yeah, Dave Hickey, who was here 18 years, then he went back. I mean, he's from East Lansing, worked at Central Michigan as an AD. And like you said, for 2 years now, he's got that job at Arizona. So first of all, every time I've seen him many times, and I was like, I wanted to congratulate you for pointing in the right direction at the end zone. I mean, so what were his memories of that?
Yeah, no, he said, I asked him that same question. He said, you know, I just wanted to make sure team was going the right way. he took some credit for pointing him that way. And he said, it's funny, you know, everybody on the issue talked to in that. All of their thoughts were the same thing. You know, it was here to you again, the Huskies. You know, you take the lead in Washington, and the Huskies always find a way to come back and break your heart. And he said, you know, he was looking at Mike Barrett and Hunt Holsapple and people on the side of them. They all had kind of this, you know, here we go again. And so that was kind of the pure emotion of that photo is the fact that everybody, you know, with the Oregon jersey on or on the Oregon sideline was thinking, God, the Huskies are going to come down and break our hearts again with a touchdown last minute. And when it went the other way, it was just sort of this feeling from everybody at Oregon saying, hey, we finally got the Huskies this time. And, you know, one other thing about that photo is you look at the fans in the background. You know, these days, a third of those people would have phones in their hand, they'd be filming it. But if you look at it there, everybody's reacting because there's no phone in their hand. You know, the Husky fans have their hands on their heads or covering their eyes. The Duck fans all have their hands raised. It's kind of a cool, kind of a pure moment back to the old days of sports when people just sit and watched events and reacted rather than trying to videotape it themselves.
Yeah, watching a game rather than trying to document it. Who'd have thunk? You mentioned,
I mean, nowadays, you know, like I say, Andy got that great shot, and I was like, Andy, you know, you were like one of the two people with a camera there. I'm like, nowadays, you'd have had 14 people who had different angles of it, but Andy's shot so good because he was right there in position, and there weren't a million people with kind of handheld phones at the time.
No, it's brilliant. You mentioned the guy with the biggest smile ever on the sideline. He's decked. There's somebody decked in Oregon green. He's behind him holding his little girl, both wearing sunglasses. So I know you kind of glossed over it, but what was the specific story there? Because that's a magical shot, too.
Yeah, so it's Doug Gubrud, who is the head of Imperial Floors in town. And his daughter is 3 years old. So anyway, if you look at it, all the other people I talked to are inside the ropes. But if you're in the floor, if you remember back in those days, you can exit Otson behind the ropes down on the field. So Doug grabs his daughter and his wife, and they're thinking the Huskies are about to win this thing, and we want to get to the car pretty quickly and get out of here. And so then that play happens, and he's got these kind of hardcore heavy binoculars on. So as he jumps up and down, the binoculars go up and cut his daughter's lip. Three-year-old daughter gets her lip cut, and she's crying and bawling. And so at this point, he's trying to run back down the field with Kenny. So he runs and hands off his daughter, who's now crying because his binoculars hit her, and hands off the daughter to his wife, who's just kind of just out of the frame of the picture, and then heads down, and suddenly the exiting Otson early plan went awry. So it was just great to hear just these different stories of people, and they were – and, you know, and like all of them, you know, Doug said, you know, I pick up the Sunday paper and I look and suddenly, you know, everybody sees us there. And it was just kind of a moment in time. And it's such a great picture just with, like you say, Mike Barrett in the air and Dave Hickey pointing and Ben Boober pumping his fist with his daughter. The fact that Andy got that all in focus is just an amazing shot. And I hope people enjoy the story and some of the background behind it now.
So when's the story coming out for folks to keep an eye out?
It'll be on DuckSports.com. It'll be up Friday morning at 10 a.m., and it'll be in the print edition on Saturday.
Sweet. How about we're talking with Steve Mims of the Register Guard. So maybe your timeline. I remember when I first met you, we would be like hanging out at Civic Stadium with one of your buddies who was a Kevin Moss of the Yankees fan. At Old Civic Stadium. So when did you graduate? When did you start at the Guard? And so what do you remember about Kenny Wheaton's going to score?
That was the year after. I had gone to Oregon. I graduated the year before that. I'd actually written for the Emerald the year before, so I was graduated and gone. So I was just watching it on TV with friends. I wasn't at the game. I was in Portland living in, actually working in Lincoln City for the News Guard as a sports writer my first year, but I'd gone to Portland that weekend to watch the game with my friends, and so I watched it there, and then I started in the Register Guard in July in 99, so just past 20 years.
Yeah, that's that. Now it comes into, because I started at my other station in January of 99, and then, you know, obviously, God, I've known you more than 20 years. I feel old, Mims.
I think we're the two longest tenured sports journalists on this town, Steve.
Well, I'm a guy who works in radio. You're the journalist, but I appreciate the shout out. So let's get to the actual team. So this team now leads the North by two. They've got all the tiebreakers, and I know a lot of people are talking about the defense, but you can't look away. So I know this is a general question, but some of the great hires of all time here, Bilotti, Chip Kelly. I mean, right now, looks like what's standing out to you about this Andy Avalos defense, which is just hitting on all cylinders?
Yeah, no, it's pretty amazing, the numbers they put up. I mean, it's just, you know, you look at it and see four straight, five straight, and single digits, and you realize that it was 3 years ago. It was, you know, averaging 42 they were giving up, so it just kind of makes you, you know, and the schedule hasn't been, you know, crazy difficult during this. At the same time, you look and think, the difference between giving up 5 a game and 42 a game, you know, even somewhere in the middle would be acceptable, but to be that low has been pretty amazing, and it'll be interesting to see. You know, I don't know that there's a ton of, you know, I've tried to ask myself, you know, with this team, have they played kind of some of the, you know, weaker schedules? I'm not sure there's a ton of high-powered offenses in the Pac-12 this year, so if you've got a defense that you're going to do with the Pac-12 this year, you might be able to keep most teams to 17-20. If you've got an offense that can just get you more than that, like basically kind of what Oregon did against Cal at Stanford. You can move along with that.
A couple final thoughts for Steve Mims of the Register Guard. I should get to some basketball. One of the big-time recruits, Nafali from Mali Dante. He's a 6'11 big. You like the nickname I just made up for him on the fly there? So what is his status? I mean, what have we learned about when he might actually be able to join the team?
Yeah, it's been a weird deal because, you know, school started 2 weeks ago today, and even last week when I talked to Dana at Pac-12 Media Day, he was still saying he might be able to get in. You know, it's a kid who reclassified and wasn't getting in right away. And, you know, my daughter just was a freshman at college this year, and I thought, man, I couldn't imagine her missing 2 weeks of school. So I was starting to wonder how long they could let it drag out, but today it did come official that he didn't get in for the fall term, which means he's going to try to get in for winter, which can get you. He'll miss 9 games, but the 10th game is actually Michigan on the day he can get in, so he's just going to play in that one. So basically you're looking at he's going to be there on about the 16th for practice. They'll have 3 non-conference games. It's 3 low-level teams they'll be playing. And basically you've got him 2 weeks to kind of get ready to see where he can be at for Pac-12. And it's a guy, you know, who obviously graduated early, so he was 17 anyway, so he was kind of young. And he'd been bulking up. He's up to 230, but now you kind of wonder just, joining practice on the 14th, only having a few games, just kind of how much they'll be. I mean, they'll get some usage, obviously, maybe from a guy, but you just wonder kind of how much at this point now with the late start that they can get from him.
All right, and lastly, I guess a general question. I remember this past weekend I was talking with Joey Mack about this. You know, the team lost Lewis King, Kenny Wooten, Bowl, even though it was a limited contribution, Paul White. But yet, there they are as a co-favorite, a slight favorite to win the conference. I mean, you're wired in. You've got colleagues. What does it say that with the turnover year to year about those in the know that just – in their minds, they're like, well, Dana and his staff, they'll figure it out and they'll contend again. It's almost like it's taken for granted.
Yeah, and a lot of it's also the Pac-12. You know, I mean, Arizona's reached a point to where, you know, they didn't have a whole lot coming back last year, and now they're rebuilding the freshmen, so they're the one team they look at just kind of based on what they bring back is Colorado, because they bring everybody back, and that was actually my pick to win the conference. But I think people just look and think, oh, Colorado, you know, that's not the very sexy team, and they'll probably be second, third, and Washington doesn't bring a lot back. I think Oregon just, you know, and they probably wouldn't have been the pick if people had known, you know, Dante was going to be out for the start, although he'll be back for Pac-12. And so I just think there's not really a dominant team. I don't even think Oregon's a top 15 preseason team, definitely not a top 10. So there's not, you know, I mean, we kind of got so used to in the days of kind of Arizona or UCLA being a top 5 and, you know, a clear favorite. It's kind of the last few years, the conference has just kind of been kind of losing guys early, and then a lot of teams are kind of relying, they're kind of usually contenders relying on freshmen and done, and people didn't really, you know, last year Washington, people didn't really buy in early, but they won it. So I think a lot of it's just the Pac-12 right now. It just seems to have so much turnover, nobody really knows what to expect, and Oregon's kind of the one that's been in the top 4 for each of the last 4 or 5 years, so I think it kind of feels like the safe pick to people.
All right, great stuff, Steve. Always a pleasure talking with you. Really looking forward to the 25th anniversary article. Again, pick up a copy of the newspaper in the sports section, registerguard.com, ducksports.com, on Twitter, the handle, @SteveMims_RG. Always a pleasure, my friend. Appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
All right.
Steve, I appreciate it. Thanks for letting me talk.
All right, take it easy. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Ejection Hotline. What are we voo-vooing?
Jalen Ramsey is in the process of being traded to the Los Angeles Rams.
Who just gave up Marcus Peters.
Fill and replace. I think they cleared out a lot of money getting rid of Peters. They pick up a couple draft picks, and now they've got the player space and maybe the money space as well to keep Jalen Ramsey in Los Angeles.
All right. Before we take our final break of the 4 o'clock hour, by the way, Bregman just got... He plunked them. 2 out, 2 on. This is a disaster. KJZ, 95.3 The Score, has got a great way for you to save big bucks. Don't pay full price. Pay half. It's twice as good. See how I figured that out? Math major. Go to our website, 95.3thescore.com. Click on the Sweet Deals link and save half price on local area businesses. Now, starting Friday, we've got another, wait for it, Restaurant Week. And so Friday, it'll be Griff's Pub in Springfield. $25 gets you a $50 gift certificate. Details available at the Sweet Deal link, 953thescore.com. Check out Sweet Deals today from KUJZ, 953thescore. All right, we'll be back. We'll wrap up the 4 o'clock hour sports talk next, 953thescore.
It's Henley.
95.3 The Score is your home for live sports talk all day, every day. Download the TuneIn app and take 95.3 The Score with you wherever you go.
Well, this is a case where you spread the field with your receivers and
give
maybe
Napoleon
they're, just, maybe
run
they're
run.
Just saving Kaufman for the last time.
12th play of the drive. Backside pressure ball is intercepted! Kenny Wheaton! Touchdown if he doesn't trip! Baby, can you believe it? 95 yards. The improbable at the most opportune time for Oregon.
Kenny Wheaton. That was Todd McKim with Ken Woody on the call 25 years ago. And it's a touchdown if he doesn't trip. That's a great call. Now, I'll tell you what, obviously more times about a billion now have heard Jerry Allen's call, but as it's happening, safe to say that a lot more people were watching on TV than listening on the radio. Because obviously you could only at the time fit 47, 48 large in there. And I honestly, even though I work in this industry, how many people listened to the average Oregon game 25 years ago across what was then the Oregon Sports Network? And remember, the game wasn't on cable. It was on network. It was either on CBS or ABC. If anybody knows that, I'd appreciate the update. One out in the ninth, Houston 4-1 over the Yankees, looking to go up 2-1. And that's two outs with another fly ball to center. So two runs the other night, Sunday, one run tonight. That is Dean Wormer's cue. Yankees, fat, drunk, stupid, and three runs in two games is no way to go through life. So although Verlander and Gerrit Cole, those guys are good at baseball, right? Yeah, a little bit. Cole hasn't lost since May. I forgot who was bringing it up, but they referenced the NBA playoff series that was going on, and it wasn't even the conference finals. It was like before then. That's the last time he lost. And the next time he even gets a chance to lose may be in the World Series, because... I got a bad feeling about this. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. If you want to jump in, you could text us 321-0824. Try us on Twitter at 953thescore for the station, for the show at Sports Talk 953. For me, for Nick, it's at Rick Nodgers. I saw, when was this happening? With the Oregon football game being early and on the road, 12:30 start. We'll be down at Sam's place at about 7:45 to set up for our 8:30 start time. But that night at Pape Field, the Oregon women's soccer team is in action, looking to bounce back after a tough game against Stanford. Now, the key there, it is the cancer awareness game. So Washington State, 7 o'clock, Pape Field. And, you know, check out and see how you could participate that night and support Kat Mertz and her charges for, obviously, the critically important cause. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. And there's the buzzer. That's the ballgame 4-1. Houston, they're up 2-1 I need a drink. All right, let's get to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Bring in Dick. Dick, good afternoon. How's it going?
Hey, Steve, I'm good. I did hear Jerry's call when I lived in Illinois.
How the heck did you manage that?
Well, I went to every sports bar I could find, and I couldn't get the Oregon game at a sports bar. So I moped home, called my little brother out here in Oregon. The game's almost over, and he goes, "Well, looks like they're going to lose. I'll just put the phone down in front of the radio."
Wow. What were you doing in Illinois? Would you lose a bet?
Well, kind of. I'm sitting there, and my wife was out shopping. And she came home shortly after the game, and she goes, "Did you find the game?" I go, "No." She goes, "Well, what's wrong with you?" I go, "What do you mean?" She goes, "You're crying."
Oh, man, that's a unique story. I like that one, Dick. And thanks for sharing. That's freaking awesome. When it's lesser and won't resonate as much because it was back east. And so my cousin is getting married. It's a Sunday during football season. For some reason, I think it was my mom's birthday. So that would make it November 16th, 1981. And the Jets are playing the Dolphins. Richard Todd is the quarterback. Now, you have to understand, I was really young when the Jets made the Super Bowl. I was 7, just turned 8 in 1968. So... And they had not won a playoff game since. They had only been in the playoffs once. So now they had changed coaches. They had Richard Todd, who played at Alabama. And they had a chance. So they, and, you know, like I said, it's 1981. And it was, Sunday, November 22nd. So I am calling my, I'm running out to the car during the wedding, and, you know, it's, yeah, la, 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 do the hokey pokey and can't watch a stupid game because my cousins had to get married on a Sunday during football season and I hate them. And it's a home game, and we have season's tickets, so that's double pissing me off. So now I'm like, there's like 2 minutes to go, and I call my buddy Witt. And he's giving me the play-by-play over the phone. Now, you have to understand, I had to go to the bar to get change because in those days, you could have just rip out your phone and call. And they're down 15-9, and they drive down the field, and with about 4 seconds to go, Richard Todd hits Jerome Barkin for the touchdown, and my buddy Witt goes, "It's over, and your quarters are running out. Talk to you later. Bye." And I go running back in the room. They beat the Dolphins 16-15. And I'm losing my mind. And was 21 at the time. So I'm sure I celebrated with a bunch of free alcohol. All right. That brings us to the top of the hour. The 5 o'clock hour is next. 95.3, The Score.
Playoffs?